Sometimes we pause in the race of life to ask tough questions, like, why does God let Satan cause so much destruction? The Bible gives us insight in answering those tough questions. Today, a look at the problem of evil as Satan tries to prevent Christ from reaching adulthood, thus preventing our redemption. Stay with us. From Chicago's Moody Church, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. We're in part four of a series on What is God Up To? Dr. Lutzer is speaking on God at War, tracing Satan's attempts to thwart God's redemptive purposes. Today we'll learn about what was perhaps the devil's most ambitious ploy.
Turn to Matthew chapter 2 for just a moment. Matthew chapter 2, what's going on here in the text? Well, we find out that Herod wants to worship Jesus. Ha, 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 ha. The Magi come to Jerusalem, and they say, we're looking for the Christ child. Incidentally, the star did not lead them to Bethlehem. It led them to Jerusalem so that the scribes could tell them what the scripture says. People think that just because they were led by the stars, people are into astrology, which the Bible forbids. It is rebellion against God for people to go by their horoscopes. But I want you to notice, Herod, of course, is so kind, isn't he? Verse 8 of chapter 2, he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and make careful search for the child, and when you have found him, report to me that I may come and worship him also. The liar. They, of course, worship Christ, and then they are warned, and they go into Egypt, and Jesus and his parents go into Egypt, and Herod finds out about it in verse 16. It says, when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and in its environs from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had ascertained from the Magi. He says, I'm going to kill them. And he didn't know which baby to kill, so he says, I'm going to kill the whole works. Satan says to himself, surely I'm going to win this victory. Did he win the victory? No. What happened was Jesus and his parents had slipped away into Egypt and escaped the hand of this dictator who was more interested in killing people than he was in any kind of righteousness. All right? I've already told you, Satan has two methods. Number one, he always tries to kill. That's his preference. You say, well, how strong is he? It says in the book of Hebrews that Satan has the power of death. Awesome. That's what he likes to do. He's the destroyer. He'd like to kill us and to kill the people of God. Does he pull it off? No, he doesn't pull it off. Jesus eludes his grasp, so he moves on to plan B, corruption. He says, I can't kill him. I'm going to corrupt him. So he takes him into the desert and says, look, command these stones that they be made bread. In other words, do a miracle independently of God. And if you don't want to do that, bow down and worship me. Fall into the sin of idolatry, and if you do that, I'm going to give you all the kingdoms of the earth and their glory. And he had the right to do that, by the way, because Jesus didn't rebuke him. He's trying to corrupt the Son of God of all things. What audacity the devil has, but it's his best shot. He's desperate. Jesus, of course, says no to all of the temptations, and once again now, Satan has a real dilemma on his hands, because he knows that Jesus is the Redeemer. He doesn't quite understand all that is going to happen, but he doesn't know now whether to support the crucifixion of Jesus Christ or to be against it. What is he supposed to do in the middle of this? If he allows the Jews to accept Christ by not offering any resistance and they embrace Jesus as Messiah, Jesus would be embraced by the nation, possibly establishing the kingdom. And, of course, we knew that he had to die. But he can't stand the nation accepting Christ as Messiah. So he, as a last-ditch effort, inspires the nation to nail Jesus Christ to the cross. And for a few brief moments, he is gleeful. It is ambivalent madness. Because he thinks to himself, I have put the Son of God on the cross. which incidentally is the topic of my sermon next week. He says, I've put Jesus on the cross. And he gets that momentary delight of seeing Christ appear in all weakness hanging there, dying like a common criminal. Oh, moments of delight, right? Ah, listen, did God have anything to do with that? Turn to Acts chapter 4 just a moment. How well did Satan do to thwart the purpose of God? Did he really derail God's program, right? God's in heaven saying, I don't know what to do. The devil's just so strong. He's just doing awful things down there. And I don't know how to handle it. No, chapter 4, verse 27 of Acts, for truly in this city there were gathered together against thy holy servant Jesus, whom thou didst anoint, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, along with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, to do whatever thy hand and thy purpose predestined to occur. I love it. It's fantastic. Here, they're going to do away with Jesus, right? I mean, that's the assignment. Nail him to a cross. Herod. Pontius Pilate. They were enemies, but they said, we can agree on this. Let's get this guy out of here. Let's nail him to a cross. The Gentiles, the Jews, they're all gathered together and they're saying, hey, look, I don't care how many differences we have. This guy's got to go. And they nail him to a cross and the blood is running and he's dying there in shame. And they're all saying, well, good riddance. Thank God he's out of the way. The text says that they gathered together to do what God predestined to occur. Wow. Satan's not doing very well because he may have gotten a moment of glee when he saw Jesus hanging on the cross, but then 3 days later, Jesus, who had been buried, is raised. And then he goes on to heaven to sit at the feet of God, above all principalities and all powers and every name that is named, both in this world and in the world to come. I have to tell you a story. My secretary told me this past week. She said that there was a woman in a church in the South who heard music in her basement, in the church basement, that she didn't like. You know that music sometimes has its preferences and people say, I don't like this kind or I don't like that kind. And she was hearing some music she didn't like, and she went to her pastor and she said, Pastor, the young people downstairs are playing such awful music that I'm sure it makes Jesus roll over in his grave. You did get that, didn't you? Jesus was raised from the dead, seated above all principalities and all powers. And what did he say just before he died? Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out, winning an incredible victory against the devil. There was an artist who painted a picture of Satan and a young man having a game of chess. And evidently the artist believed that evil was going to triumph over good, so he painted the pieces in such a way that the devil had just moved his queen and announced checkmate in 4 moves. The young man's face was ashen and pale because the agreement was that if he could not win over the devil, he would have to become the devil's slave. And I'm told that that picture hung in art galleries and chess players from all over the world came and looked at it and agreed that the devil had won. But there was one man by the name of Paul Morphy of Louisiana who went and looked at that picture and he stood there and he stared 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and he began in his mind to make various moves and suddenly he shouted, young man, there's a move you can make. There's a move you can make. They overlooked the fact that there was a move he could make. It wasn't checkmate. You look at Jesus Christ on Good Friday, how weak he seems to be and undistinguished. But you look at him on Easter Sunday and you realize there was a move he made. No checkmate for Jesus. The devil was checkmated, and how fearful he was. Now what I'd like to do, I've given you 3 examples of how, no matter how awesome Satan's power, all that he could do is to nip Christ's heel. And it was Jesus that gave him the awesome blow to the head.
tried to destroy a race, he tried to destroy a nation, he tried to destroy a man, and he couldn't do it. Let me give you now three brief conclusions. First, you realize, of course, that there are only two kingdoms in this battle, only two. The Apostle Paul says that it is the Lord who translated us out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of his dear Son. There is the kingdom of Satan with all of his antagonisms and rebellion against God, and then there is the kingdom of light with its righteousness, with its love and worship and praise and adoration of God. And you and I are in one kingdom or another. There is no such thing as neutrality. Please understand that. Either you are a member of God's kingdom or you are a member of Satan's kingdom. You say, well, I don't feel though that I'm in a battle. I'm just coasting along in life. Well, you've been anesthetized.
Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and I hope that as you are listening today, that you are one with your ears open to truth, a desire to serve the Lord Jesus Christ and to hear his voice, so that you might not be deceived. Yes, it is true, there is the kingdom of darkness and there is the kingdom of light. And today, as I speak to you, you are in one kingdom or the other. And at the end of the day, we know that the kingdom of light wins over the kingdom of darkness. Just like you can take a flashlight into a room and no matter how dark it is, the light will always win. In that, we can take confidence. Well, my message raised another question that might be in your mind. In light of the fact that God allows Satan so many victories, how strong is the devil anyway? I love to ask that question because I also love to answer it. And here's the answer. The devil is as strong as God allows him to be, and not one whit more. So as you fight the devil today, and the Bible tells us that we should put on the armor of God, as you and I fight the devil today, let's do so from the standpoint of strength. Let's understand that moment by moment, the devil must be subject to God and to his will. Now, of course, God does give the devil much latitude, but that is only in anticipation of a final judgment that in the end will be so much worse. Well, I hope that you keep listening to these sermons. Of course, they are entitled, What is God Up To? And at the end of this broadcast, you'll be given information as to how you can receive this set of messages that I hope you will keep for yourself, but also, after you've listened to them again, share them with your friends. I'm here today to offer you hope, encouragement, and I trust a means by which your faith can be built to the glory of God.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Next time on Running to Win, Erwin Lutzer concludes God at War, part of his current series on What is God Up To? Beginning Wednesday, we'll see why Christ's death was no defeat as Dr. Lutzer brings a message on Dying a Winner. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. We believe this 8-part series will help you understand God's overall plan for the human race. What is God Up To can be yours on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. For details, call 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. On the internet, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win, Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of Running to Win.